95 BFM.
It's time for What's Up with Deputy Leader of the National Party, Nicola Willis.
Good morning, Nicola.
Good morning.
How's it going? Are you in Tamaki at the moment, or are you elsewhere in the country?
I'm in Wellington, and I can tell you it is grey and foggy and on the verge of raining. Otherwise, it's wonderful.
It's very much been pretty foggy up here. I've had texts coming this morning reminding drivers to switch their lights on. I don't think the fog is as bad as yesterday, but it does say something about the weather that we're currently experiencing up here as well. But hey, it's good for the garden, right? And I think we need, if it's hitting the central North Island, we need the Taupō to fill up a bit for the hydro generation, right?
That's right, exactly. We need water for our electricity, so there's a positive sign and water for the garden.
Yes. Okay, this morning, Nicola, we're going to start off with digital programs to share health information between hospitals, GPs and specialists across district boundaries have been scrapped or stopped due to funding cuts. Given the government's decision to cut $381 million in planned digital investment in the health system, what are the immediate and long-term implications for the modernisation of health infrastructure?
Well, look, the government remains interested in those digital investments, and those are things that we're certainly prepared to consider funding in future. At this budget, we decided not to continue funding for things that didn't have detailed business cases. We wanted real planning to be underway on projects before we agreed to fund them. And so some of that contingency funding that had been put there was removed. So contingency funding is not guaranteed funding, it's funding there just in case. And we said, well, why don't we put it in when we've got a bit more certainty? So Health New Zealand have made decisions about the individual projects that they're progressing and not progressing, but you can expect to see digital investment continuing into the future.
I understood that this integrated digital system was to upgrade general information sharing, and there's concerns that, you know, the healthcare system is going to be stuck in the past where people are relying on phone calls and paper records without this investment.
I certainly don't want to see that happen and see an important role for digitisation. As you'll be aware, also need to make sure that when we're investing in digital projects, we've got clear plans in place and that all of the preparatory work has been done. Mm. There have been lots of examples in the past where government or other organisations embark on digital projects without clear plans, and then you can see costs blowing up, you can see problems in implementation, and we didn't want that to happen. So our encouragement to Health New Zealand is get those clear business cases on the table, get clear plans in place, and yes, that's exactly the sort of thing we want to fund to improve the efficiency and productivity of the health system.
I mean, how does the government justify prioritising other spending over digital health investments, considering the critical role that the investment in digital infrastructure will play in improving patient outcomes?
Well, the government prioritised health funding in this budget. We put in more than $16 billion over the next three budgets. So it is an area that is actually the focus of new spending in our budget. And as I say, we are open to increased investment in digital infrastructure and digital investments in the future. This is simply a timing matter and making sure that when we agree to new funding, we're exactly clear about where it's going and what it's doing.
Digital health advocates have expressed concerns about the loss of momentum and institutional knowledge due to the budget cuts. How does the government plan to address these gaps?
Well, look, it's up to Health New Zealand to manage their capital investment program in a way that's logical and to make sure that they're doing things in the right order and that they've contracted people. We have unashamedly across government said, look, we want you to reduce the amount of spending you're doing on consultants and contractors, because what we'd seen in recent years is a move away from developing in-house expertise and a move towards outsourcing a lot of work that could be done internally. So you are seeing that reduction in contractors, and I know that there are some contractors who aren't happy about that, but that is in line with what we campaigned on and what we think is a good direction.
Okay, moving over to Kāinga Ora and state housing, we've obviously seen a bunch of projects put on hold recently. Glendowie, Onehunga, Northcote, I think, they've been in the news. Just for some background here, Nicola, so 1991 levels of state housing in Aotearoa was roughly around 5.4% of the total housing stock. Currently, state housing in New Zealand is only 3.8% of New Zealand's total housing stock compared to a 6.7 OECD average, with over 25,000 households in New Zealand on the social housing wait list and a bunch of kāinga ora builds obviously suspended due to budget cuts. What specific plans does the National Party have to increase the supply of state and social housing to meet this demand?
Well, we're all about increasing the supply of social housing, not only through kāinga ora state housing, but through community housing providers as well. And when we do that, we want to ensure that the dollars we're investing are going to their best purpose and helping people in the best way. And we've had serious concerns that kāinga ora has not been delivering that level of value for money and performance. And I just ask you to reflect on the simple fact. Over the past 6 years, even while the previous government invested billions more into kāinga ora, the number of New Zealanders on that social housing waiting list, waiting for a home, more than quadrupled. And we saw literally thousands of people living in motel rooms. So we're doing a clean-up to make sure the money is focused in the right areas. Over the next couple of years, I'm advised that kāinga ora will be building around 4,800 homes. In addition, in the budget, we agreed to provide the funding for 1,500 more places for people in community housing providers across the country. So we're committed to doing social housing, but doing it right and in a way that represents good value for money.
Mm. I mean, obviously there has been a significant market failure to address housing supply, both from the government and the private sector. Obviously, we could see the resultant rise in homelessness, which was evident when emergency and transitional housing measures were put in place over COVID. I mean, how does National plan to address this?
Well, I think that's exactly the point I'm making, which is that the approach of the previous government clearly wasn't working as well as it needed to, given the number of people who were still waiting for homes who were still not being placed in homes. And so the approach we're taking as a government is more of what we call a social investment approach, which is to say, well, who are the individual New Zealanders and families who are looking for homes? And what's required to get them homed in a way that is permanent and lasting? And sometimes, yes, that will be a kāinga or a home. In other cases, it may be that a community housing provider is better able to provide for that person with the kinds of services that they need in support of their housing. In other cases, it might actually be that person needs a bit of help getting into a private rental. So there are a range of options. We are investing in this area, but we've had major concerns that kāinga ora has not been performing and delivering the value that we think taxpayers have a right to expect.
I spoke to Chris Hipkins last week, and obviously the recent report was a Bill English-led report. Chris Hipkins described it as a political hit job. What would you say about this?
I just think that's really unfair. I've read that report. It's very thorough. Bill English was one of three reviewers who were engaged to deliver it. And really what it did is it just stepped through the facts, which are that kāinga ora has had billions of dollars provided to it, and yet waiting lists have grown. The cost of building kāinga ora homes is more expensive than it is for other developers. There's been a lack of oversight of a lot of the work that it's done. And the concerns that were raised in that report, I think anyone reading it would think, gosh, actually these are issues that deserve to be addressed. And as a government, we're stepping up to address them.
Now, just onto housing standards and the long-term costs of, improved buildings. But given the significant long-term benefits and higher housing standards, given the significant long-term benefits of higher housing standards, including lower maintenance costs and reduced carbon emissions, what's the National Party stance on maintaining or improving these standards?
Look, we do need to maintain existing state house homes. And again, that's another area that kāinga ora has been slow on in recent years. You might recall that the previous government exempted kāinga ora from having to meet the healthy home standards on the same timeline as private landlords, which was a bit ironic. And so we do think that maintenance and upgrading its current homes should be part of the work that the state house landlord does, and we continue to see that as part of their purpose.
Okay, one last question for you, Nicola, just on tenant wellbeing. Research shows that the wellbeing of tenants in secure public housing is significantly higher than those in private rental housing. What steps will National take to ensure this level of tenant wellbeing is maintained or improved?
Look, we're really interested in tenant wellbeing, and that's one of the reasons why we've provided that funding for 1,500 more community housing places, because community housing providers, which are people like the Salvation Army, Habitat for Humanity, the Monte Cecilia Trust, have a really proven track record of having high levels of tenant satisfaction and of sustaining tenants for their tenants. So we think those are positive things, and it's actually part of why we're not just sticking to the one solution of growing ORA, but are investigating other ways of providing permanent, good housing for New Zealanders in need.
Okay, one last question via the text machine, Nicola. When are these successive governments going to stop blaming everything on their predecessors? It's getting a bit tedious.
Oh, look, I totally get that. And actually, that was something that when I was an opposition spokesperson would really frustrate me, when a minister's answer was saying after 6 years of a Labor government that somehow it was the previous National government's fault. So I get it. That kind of tennis match isn't fun. Look, we've been in government around 6 months. We are in the process of picking up things where we don't think enough progress was made, or we think mistakes were made, and turning those things around. That's part of the reality of our job, but we're very much focused on the future. So I think that texter has a point.
All right. Hey, Nicola, thank you very much for speaking with us this morning. We'll look forward to catching up with you in a couple of weeks' time.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Cheers. Bye.
That was What's Up with Deputy Leader of the National Party, Nicola Willis.